Welcome to today's Case Study Museum interview, one of eight recorded for the AMM Essential Questions Program series. Over the course of this series, we're finding out how museums are faring today, 3 years after the start of the pandemic and civic unrest following George Floyd's murder. We'll be chatting with eight different museums across the Midwest about what they've learned about themselves and their audiences, what changes they've made that have stuck, and what new models or approaches they've tried. These interviews are talk show style, featuring guest moderators. They're also pre-recorded so that you can listen to them when it is convenient. Listeners will have the opportunity to ask questions of our museum panelists during live Q&A sessions this spring. Stay tuned for more. Today's interviewers are Jen Edgington, Director of Interpretation at the Illinois State Museum and doctoral candidate in First Nations Education at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and Sarah Phelan, Director and Curator at the West Chicago City Museum and the Warrenville Historical Museum and Art Gallery. With that, let's start the interview. Sarah and Jen, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Charity. And we're very excited to be with you all today, sharing your story from the Chippewa Valley Museum. I'd like to just start by asking you three to introduce yourself. So if we could go Carrie, Rachel, and Olaf, please. Thanks.
Yeah, wonderful. My name is Carrie Ronander. I am the executive director at the Chippewa Valley Museum, where I've been at that organization for 22 years.
Hi, my name is Rachel Lang. I'm the current curator at the Chippewa Valley Museum and the former director at the Wisconsin Logging Museum, where I was there for about 2 years.
Olaf, you're still muted.
Hello, my name is Olaf Lind. I'm the creative director at Chippewa Valley Museum, where I've been working for the last 5 years.
Well, we're so happy to have you all with us today, and thank you so much. To start things off, we've been asking the museums who have joined us in these series a few different questions about what they've learned in the last few years and what maybe their new normal looks like. So we're curious, can you describe your new normal for us?
We talked about this on Friday about what our new normal is. And I know, I think we're kind of still working that out. It seems to change as the seasons change. What we were doing last year is just a little bit different than this year. But I will ask Olaf. He had a really good answer to this question, so I'll turn it over to Olaf.
I think, yeah, we're still very much looking for some sense of normal. The sort of normal that we have right now is just being in a state of continual adjustment. You know, we moved very quickly to figure out how to do virtual and hybrid programs, how to get things out to schools that might be useful to them. A lot of those things we found remain, but not necessarily at the same level. So it's a lot of adjustment trying to figure out who's doing what now that we've added a lot of the things that we were doing before back into the mix.
I think that's an important part about balancing that and figuring out, you know, we all did so much during the closure period of the pandemic, and now it's readjusting to that. I think for your case at the Chippewa Valley Museum, you've done a lot of adjusting because not only have you been through the pandemic and figuring out what life with this continual issues will be, you've also merged. And we'd love to hear a little bit about what was really the origination and what drove you all to even open up discussions that led to this eventual merger.
I'll start with that answer, and then I'll ask Rachel too. I'll, you know, bat it over to Rachel as we go along. Physically, the Chippewa Valley Museum and the Wisconsin Logging Museum are very close on a campus. So space-wise, we're next door neighbors. I mean, we don't even necessarily have to put on jackets to walk next door, although this time of year you should. So for many years, we have tried to share some things, like we have joint tickets in the summer. And then during the school year, we will share school tours. But that was kind of the limit as to what you were sharing. Our boards were very different. Our histories are pretty different. How we were operating is different. The logging museum was much more part-time staff, where the board did a lot of the work, and it was reverse for the Chippewa Valley Museum. So over, since I've been here, actually in 22 years, there's been talks on and off about working more closely together, and there's always been something that has stopped that. So the last couple of years was, how do we, use our resources better, our human capital, especially as we saw a real significant decline in volunteers, and how do we better use back office stuff? Like, we have a neighbor next door that's using similar accounting program as we are, so trying to save expenses. So part of our strategic plan at the Chippewa Valley Museum, that we did it back in 2021, I think it was to really explore an expanded relationship with the logging museum, not necessarily merging, but were there roles that could be not duplicated, where we could combine them and we would pay them something and they would pay us something. And as talks evolved last spring, it really was, well, maybe the best road is one that's been talked about for the last 40 years, is to perhaps combine our operations and do what the public actually thinks we already are doing, is, being one museum. So that's like the backstory as the big picture. And Rachel, I think you could really speak to what was going on at the logging museum during this time.
Yeah, one of the big things, like Carrie mentioned, is the decline in volunteerism, especially in this era. We went from being pre-pandemic almost an entirely volunteer-run organization with two part-time staff members, and then moving towards a single full-time staff member. And then as we moved here mid-post-pandemic, whatever you want to call it, it sort of became obvious that that is just not a structure that's going to work anymore, especially where we were and what we were trying to do. So that was a big driving force, at least from our end. And then similar to Chippewa Valley Museum, we also did a strategic plan, and there was a lot of great ideas, a lot of cool, like, new visions. And a lot of that became very apparent that it would be incredibly difficult, if not almost impossible, for a single full-time staff member to pull off. And our space limitations just make it very difficult for us to expand, while also competing with a museum with more resources, a bigger staff, all of that. And so we kind of started talking about how can we make everyone work a little bit differently. And Chippewa Valley just seemed like the perfect answer, at least from my perspective. So getting deeper into those talks, and like Carrie mentioned, it had been something that had been talked about for quite a while. So yeah.
This is really interesting and fascinating. So thank you so much for sharing with us. And I'd love to kind of delve a little deeper. And so looking at now, you've merged, you kind of planned this, you've had the merger. What changes resulted in your organization structure or operations, if anything, or has it kind of been work as is? What's different in your day-to-day?
Again, I'll start, but I'm going to ask everybody else to jump in as well. We are still very much in the process of merging, it feels like, as far as operations go. And that really has to do with the logging museum. It's a seasonal museum. So it closes in October and doesn't open up until, the last 2 years has been June, but it used to be May. So now it's Memorial Day. So we had this kind of buffer time to kind of figure out how operations are going to work with what we call next door. We're still I don't think even intellectually we're all the way there as far as the merger goes yet. For example, you asked how many employees are at the museum, and I replied with 13. That is an inaccurate number, I realized just before this conversation, because the logging museum has historically hired seasonal employees. So they have four on the rolls that we will be looking at hiring again. So, you know, we're going to be like 17. So I haven't even myself thinking of it all in the big picture yet. So operationally, we're still working through trying to get our strategic plans merged as one. We are still trying to formulate a vision that incorporates both organizations or both museums. And we did agree on a mission statement a couple of weeks ago. So that is key. And then operationally, we merged boards as well. So, you know, from the big picture structure, that has also been interesting. But the board itself, the new board, that was only formed December 13th. So they have only met once in this new merger environment. So I am still learning as, you know, executive director, how they are all working together and perceiving this all. So it's interesting. When I say we merged boards, so four members from the Logging Museum board joined the Chippewa Valley Museum board, and our board is a structure of 15. So now it's 11 and 4 is how that all worked out. So I'll be silent now and let either Rachel or Olaf jump in.
Well, for me, my job completely changed. So that was a pretty big change, I would say. You know, I joked a little bit that I just moved my office a couple hundred feet next door. So, but other than that, I'm still partially playing a sort of mediator role as we work through, you know, like this is how this used to work and here's how we're hoping it'll work now, and just sort of doing that while also doing curator things. So it's been kind of interesting that way, kind of doing a little bit of everything.
And from the sort of marketing side, we're still making decisions on how to deal with website, how to deal with social media things. You know, do we keep separate pieces? Do we bring it all under one umbrella? So those things are still, you know, we're prototyping, you know, web pages. We're looking at the social media and figuring out, you know, how do we best communicate with the, you know, the community around us and those who might be interested in knowing something about the museum. And that takes time.
Something that I find so fascinating that one of you said about, you just, when you merged, you did what some of the public had already thought you were. My local history museum is in a city that also has a historical society that was founded before us, that again is like three doors down, you know, not too far. And I think this is something that I'm sure you all have done a whole lot of thought work around. But when merger talks happen, there is, and I think, you know, I want to say this is specific to local history, but I don't know that it is, but there is something that seems very ownership based of, you know, a certain set of stakeholders who feel like, what would we lose if we come together, or will my story be lessened, or will my active participation in this organization be diminished in some way? Especially when you have stakeholders who tie themselves and their identities, their family stories, you know, to an institution like that. I assume you all have done a ton of discussion with stakeholders, with board members, with employees. What does that look like? How have you worked with the community internally too on this journey?
I'll go on the same route, me, Rachel, Olaf. Actually, I'm going to ask Rachel to start, because I think that the stakeholder group that it was most concerned about the merger, and which has been with the Logging Museum for a very long time, is our local Kiwanis Clubs. The Kiwanis Clubs started what was the Paul Bunyan Logging Camp Museum back in the 30s, and that became the Wisconsin Logging Museum a couple of years ago. And so it was those discussions that were probably the most challenging and that are a little bit ongoing. So Rachel, you want to talk to that briefly?
Yes, so I can talk a little bit about that. Like Carrie said, the Kiwanis Clubs here in Eau Claire are very passionate about The Paul Bunyan Logging Camp, which changed to the Wisconsin Logging Museum, of course. And early on, we knew that we were going to have to make sure that they felt involved in the process every step of the way. So it was one of the first things we talked about. We said, you know, we need to make sure that they're in the room. We need to make sure that they feel heard and that they feel like they're not going to lose that attachment or that identity. So myself and several board members went to lots of Kiwanis meetings. We answered lots of emails. We had listening sessions and just made sure that they felt like we were available to them if they had questions, concerns, thoughts, anything like that. And like Carrie said, that continues to be an ongoing discussion with those groups. And, you know, they had places on the board at WLM, and some of them have places on the board now. And yeah, it's just making sure that they feel heard, included, and they don't feel like their identity is getting overshadowed.
Yeah, and as a follow-up to that, I've had like one of our board members is a longtime Kiwanis member, new board members. And so we had coffee when he started on the board. So he could share with me the history of Kiwanis and a logging camp. And he also presented to the new board the history of the logging camp so that at least the board has an understanding from his perspective of what the history of the logging camp should be. And that's when, so we've been saying in all these months that we've been having these discussions about maintaining separate identities, unique identities, which is a challenging phrase because don't always quite know what that means. But it was a way to at least communicate that we weren't going to, at CVM, Chippewa Valley Museum, wasn't going to basically completely absorb the Wisconsin Logging Museum. So that was key. And the other really important discussions we had with stakeholders internally was with staff. We actually worked with a consultant to have the consultant, you know, have listening sessions with each individual staff member, and then as a group as well. And then we had a volunteer listening session, if not two of them, and the volunteers included volunteers from both organizations. Though I will say that many more volunteers from CVM attended than Wisconsin Logging Museum, but that's just more a matter of just numbers because we have more volunteers. And then sending communication out to members themselves, trying to keep them informed of the process before it went to the press. And so trying to keep one step ahead of everything. And you know, actually so far, for the most part, the communication has gone pretty smoothly. There's been a couple of stumbles, I would say, when it came to misunderstanding of what was being communicated with the Kiwanis clubs. But for the most part, it's gone okay, I would say.
And I would add to that, you know, we've tried really hard to make sure that members, volunteers, and the community are aware and feel like they have input. You know, when we were sitting down and, you know, thinking about how do we make sure that communication flows well, we created talking points. When we were looking at, you know, writing press releases, we often wrote a press release for one result and a press release for another result, just so that we had those things ready to go so that we could communicate things to members and volunteers before, again, it hit the local media. We really wanted to make sure that they felt like they were really an important part of the discussion.
Sounds like transparency and collaboration really drove this, which is really amazing. And I think probably a signal of success. And something that you mentioned earlier, and I would love to hear more about it. A lot of museums do collaborations. They don't necessarily think to do collaborations with other museums. And it sounds like the start of all of this was a collaboration between the two museums that were kind of next door neighbors, but can you talk a little bit more about the collaboration foundation that you had to get to this point of the merger?
Sure. So because our museums are so physically close, and they were really only divided by a split rail fence visually, is that visitors, if you're from the outside, if you're coming into the park where we're located, they see it as one thing. And so they would stop first at the Logging Museum, that was the first place on the road, and they would pay a ticket price if it's a summer visitor. And then they might come to the Chippewa Valley Museum and pay another ticket price. And then like be very confused as to why is this one museum charging us twice? So that is why a number of years ago, we worked together with the Logging Museum to come up with what we call the joint ticket. So it'd be $1 off each admission for both sides. And then we would swap money throughout the summer, basically. And we found over the years that actually more visitors began at the Logging Museum and actually began at the Chippewa Valley Museum. Bigger parking lot, first thing on the road, and then they would come next door. But that, you know, that wasn't always the case. Sometimes people just want to see one or the other. So they would buy just one ticket, For the majority of summer visitors, they really did buy the joint tickets. And then when it came to school tours, again, because we're so physically close, and the logging history is a pretty significant story for our region. And so it's in the curriculum of any of the grade schools that they told the story better than what you could tell the Chippewa Valley Museum. We do have one of our exhibits that has logging in it, but it never made much sense for us to do much more than have a small section. But there's a whole logging camp next door that people could immerse themselves in. So as long as I've been here, we have had somebody from the CVM side schedule tours for both sides of the Logging Museum and the Chippewa Valley Museum. So those two partnerships, collaborations really, really began, you know, decades ago, actually, probably in the 90s. And that is something that just continued forward. So it made it, so at the leadership level, you know, executive director level, and at the educator level, there was always this communication back and forth, but not necessarily at the board level. The boards really were independent, and really, as I have discovered since our talks of merger began, they don't know what goes on next door. They don't know how the places run next door. And there were board members who'd never been in the other museum, both sides. And so it's been an education across the board, so to speak. And the culture is different. It's very different. And so just to have learning how that board operated has been a process.
I think something that I find fascinating, especially as museums, you know, many museums in 2008 with the economic downturn took a huge budget hit. Pandemic did not help. Economic uncertainty, inflation, there's so many financial challenges, especially to smaller institutions that don't have large endowments. You had raised in the beginning, Carrie, about, you know, this resource issue too, and sharing back a house or sharing even the ticket, sharing. There's so many ways to collaborate. I also wonder, and I know you all are still kind of working through this, but do you see that there could be more financial models? Like, will this open up resources for you all to feel more financially stable? To, you know, have you had those discussions or even with your members of ways that they can make a bigger impact now that you are merged and could have a bigger financial goals as well?
Well, the merger definitely has expanded our member and donor database. So there's that potential that is there. And it is likely that we are going to be changing our admission and membership rates. So now that we automatically grandfathered in all logging museum members into the CVM membership and then vice versa. But I mean, they now have a lot more to experience. So we have been looking at how to increase the return, so to speak, on that. But I'm not quite sure how that's all going to go. But what I have experienced is that we have always done a year-end appeal. For many, many years, we've done a year-end appeal, like many organizations. And I was anticipating that we would get a larger return this year. And it didn't hit expectations. But what I don't know is how much of an impact inflation, pandemic weariness and giving has had an impact on that. So I don't know if the logging museum roles were in that, if it would be even that much lower. So I just know that I was slightly disappointed, but as far as the giving goes, there's a lot of room for growth and potential when it comes to that area. One of the challenges that we are now in is that we, just jumped into this merger in this new calendar year. It became official December 31st, 2022, but we started the calendar year without a merged budget. And we're still working on it. That I would not recommend. I would really recommend that if you are looking at merging, is that the finance committee really think about what your merged budget should look like. I was kind of surprised that they hadn't gotten to that point, but I think partly it's because we were really trying to push things along very rapidly at the end of the calendar year. And so there were things that didn't get done. So now we are a month and a half into this and still working without a merged budget.
And I think Carrie can probably speak some more to this as well, but one of the collaborations that we've been working hard to develop is with our local tourist sort of bureau, local tourism. And they, they felt that they could probably help us out a little bit more if we were together rather than if we were separate organizations. So that's another sort of collaboration stream with a local entity who's they're here to bring people into the area and have a good time, and so that was also part of the discussion of the merger.
So I hear a few things that are kind of coming to the surface in terms of advice for museums who are considering a merger. And especially as Sarah was saying, there's a lot of smaller institutions who are still struggling after the pandemic or struggling to find their place in maybe a more saturated market that they could do more if they were merged. So thinking for those people that might have been, or those museum professionals who are hearing this, thinking, hey, I have an idea in my local community. All of you, I'm really interested in hearing from all of you, but what one piece of advice would you offer to other museum professionals who are in your shoes, looking to make similar changes, maybe merging or working more collaboratively with other institutions in their backyard? I imagine the budget is definitely one that I feel like I would push, but I'm interested to hear what other pieces of advice you would hear.
It is difficult to limit it to just one, what has worked very well with us is that we hired an outside consultant to help manage the project. And so that individual has really helped communicate to all of the different committees we developed and the different boards and the staff. And so having one person who isn't right in the midst of it within the organization, I would really highly recommend, because I can say for certain that if it had been left up to me, I don't know when this could have happened. It is very time intensive. And a lot of decisions are constantly having to be made, even now. I would really recommend that an outside individual come help guide it all for you.
Another good piece of advice, we've heard a little few rumblings about it, is just slow down a little bit. Take your time. We had our reasons for moving as quickly as we did, but for anyone in the future looking to do something like this, slow down. Have all your consultants, all of your legal people, everything like that, have them all look everything over. Just take your time. And it doesn't need to be done by the end of the year. You can wait, get that operation stuff squared away, all of that good stuff, so that when you're fully merged, things just go a little bit smoother and reduce some of that stress on your staff.
And yeah, I would echo both of those things. And particularly, I think one of the things that's great about having an outside consultant come in is it makes it a lot easier to listen to what different contingents have to say, what different groups of people have to say. When you're very, very close to something, it seems also dreadfully important at the moment. And it is dreadfully important, but it's also very important to hear what other people are saying. Those communication pieces, the listening sessions, those sorts of things are really essential to sort of honing what you're doing and honing what you want to communicate with the community. And that is so much easier with that consultant sort of piece there, that somebody who's not from either of the organizations, but is facilitating talking and listening.
I'm sorry, I have to, I get two. So I also think it's important that anybody, those considering this, is to be aware that there are going to be more expenses up front than perhaps you anticipate. There are legal fees, especially because you want to make sure you have to file things and you will have to hire an outside counsel. The consultant is an outside fee, and it's good to have already talked to wherever you need to get the money to help support this. We applied for an ARPA grant through our county, American Rescue Plan Act, and so about $30,000 of those funds is being used to help support this merger, which includes hiring a limited term employee. So, and then we also spoke to our foundation ahead of time saying, we think we need this amount of support going into this. So it's really important that you have some funds set aside and know where you're going to get them before really going too deep into it.
I think one of the other things that we had talked about as a group the other day was making sure that you are aware of what the rules are at each organization for doing such a thing. Because one organization may require one vote and another might require three votes, or you might have to have this happen or that happen. So just really sort of at the beginning saying, gosh, if we're gonna move forward with this, what are the rules? How does the actual process work at each organization's at each organization will save a little bit of headache?
You said, Carrie, that the ARPA funds kind of helped fill some of that gap. Do you feel that the pandemic was very, very hard in many ways, but it did bring some additional funding and brought some issues to the surface with some plans. Do you think without that huge shift of way of thinking and those funds being available, would this have happened You know, did the pandemic drive this in any way? I know you guys had so much collaboration prior.
That's a really good question. I think partly, yes. I don't know how much further we would have gotten had the pandemic not made us think differently. Certainly, I think that's true for the logging side of things. We did get some boon funding because of the pandemic, and that helped. But in 2020, I think we were pretty set on how things were going to go and didn't really think about, is this going to be something you want to consider down the road? And in fact, it did come up, people would say to me about, why don't you just kind of work together more closely with the logging museum? And I would say, I don't think the boards are ready. I don't think you want to go there. I mean, to be quite frank. And yeah, it was a seismic shift, I think, as the pandemic really just upended everything.
Sounds like the new normal is still transitioning, is still changing, but that's okay, right? A lot of museums are doing that, and you all are undergoing a huge transformation of what your museum, now museums, look like, and especially in this post-pandemic turnover. So I know that you're still working to figure out some issues, like you talked about. Budget isn't in place yet, this merged budget. I'm sure you've had quite a few other ones. Is there anything that you haven't quite figured out yet? And what steps are you taking, or where are you looking for inspiration? Because museum merging isn't something that happens every day. So I'm sure some of this is coming from trial and error, or going and learning as you go. And I'm sure that can also lead to some frustration within everything you're doing too.
But I think one of the big questions we have going forward is how to staff the logging museum this coming summer, and how it was done in the past is not going to be how it's in the future. One of the challenges we've had, like many museums, with the decline of volunteerism, which we've talked about briefly before this, but our solution at the Chippewa Valley Museum was to set up a lead and backup staff model, which we didn't have before the pandemic. It used to be there was, one like visitor services staff person, and on the weekends there'd be one visitor staff and volunteers. Now with a lead and backup staff, if a volunteer isn't available at the front desk, and that happens quite a bit, lead staff moves up into the front desk role and backup staff becomes backup to the lead, so that we are guaranteed. So we've had a lot of professional staffing of our front desk. And then it was just different next door. And so I think that is something we are still having to figure out in the next 2 months, how we are going to keep that model that is also better security model than we've had in the past, how that will work at the logging museum. Does that mean that our professional staff will now, does somebody have to work 2 Saturdays every month this summer, or 2 Sundays every month this summer? I don't know yet, possibly. That's the biggest question mark I see operationally going forward. I mean, there are other things like how exhibits are changing and which organization gets the priority for the new exhibit and the maintenance. So there's that too. So we have to come up with a bigger exhibit schedule going forward. But in the very short term, like in 3 months from now, how are we going to open the logging museum?
So like one of the things that goes along with that, that's just sort of a mundane everyday sort of thing, is, how do you get your networks tied together, right? We're keeping both spaces, right? So we're not merging and bringing, you know, exhibits in-house where we are. We're now trying to have a single network, you know, tech network through both campuses. And we've been working on that, but, you know, we're tying fiber together. And then how many access points do you need? You're trying to cover inside, or you're trying to cover outside as well. So there's all these sort of little questions, right? Little ones of how do you get a functional desk space? How do you have a network for your point of sale system? Tying up, those are all the sort of just everyday things that, you know, are exhausting, but you have to think about because it has to be open in a couple months or a month or summer. So it has to be open soon, right? And it has to be a good experience, not only for the visitors, but also for the staff and volunteers, right? They have to be able to work there. And so there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, just trying to get the legal pieces done. But then there's all of the how do you get the spaces to function? Do you need extra signage so that people understand how to move through the campus and all those sorts of things that just are the day-to-day doing of making it work.
It's so fascinating to hear, you know, that very high level stuff and then all those, like the amount of, you know, we are all so strapped in smaller museums that to add this is huge. It's huge, but very commendable, especially with all the benefits this could bring. I know all of you had mentioned that you drafted a couple of press releases. You know, with this being such a unique thing, we see some mergers in nonprofits, you know, and obviously the corporate world is a hot merger mess, but do you, you know, what has the publicity been like, you know, has this been like an interest piece? Could this also be a nice selling point for you to get more publicity? What's that been like with the local media?
Yeah, the local media has picked up a lot of what we've put out. You know, we have a good relationship with our local arts and culture sort of magazine. They've picked up some stories. The local newspaper has, local television has. You know, in general, I think people in the area really feel good about having the museums, you know, be here. They feel proud that these things exist and that it's part of their community. And so, you know, a lot of what we put out to the media does get picked up. The things that I find a little more interesting are when I'm out and about and I stop at a local music shop and the person behind the counter looks up at me and says, "Oh, Olaf, how's the merger going? I heard this." So there actually is quite a bit of like really organic local interest, people stopping me when I'm out, you know, shopping, people just sort of wanting to know how things are going and what does it mean. And, you know, we have a very, you know, a set of responses that we can sort of riff on a little bit. Oh, it's going really well. You know, we're still working on exactly what it's going to look like, but, you know, we're hoping to do these things. And so, you know, I think it's been really good. And I think it does bring a lot more attention to the fact that we have this really amazing park that's a historical part of the city. It's really an amazing story, the park itself. And in that park, you have an amazing baseball stadium. You have great spaces to walk in. You can go fishing. You can go kayaking on the lake. You can visit two museums. It really is a pretty remarkable thing. And I think that that the local community appreciates that.
How lucky. That sounds so great. Well, I know that I'm really excited to see the future for you all. And Sarah is too. And I'm really excited to see what this merger is going to do to these two institutions kind of becoming one. So we look forward to continuing to check in and hearing more from you all, but we want to just take a moment to just Thank you so much for joining us. So thank you, Carrie and Rachel and Olaf, for being part of this conversation. And as always, thank you, Sarah, for joining me with all of our questions. But we truly appreciate all of your hard work and also for sharing this story with us, because hopefully it inspires others that might be in the same situation. So thanks, everyone.
Yes, thank you all so much.
You're welcome. Glad to be a part of this.